Hello, good people. What is up? Today, I thought we'd dive into a really interesting love story. I'm not going to tell you who it is because it will probably become obvious. Okay, it's the American love story of Kamala Harris's parents. Really interesting one. So I hope you enjoy. Here we go. At North Campus Space at the University of California at Berkeley in the fall of 1962, a tall, thin Jamaican doctoral student addressed a small crowd, drawing parallels between his native country and the US. He told the group, a room full of black students, that he had grown up observing British colonial power in Jamaica, the way a small number of whites had cultivated a native black elite in order to mask extreme social inequality. At 24, Donald J. Harris was already professorial, as regarded as the Anglican accolade he had once been. But his ideas were edgy. One member of the audience found them so compelling that she came up to him after the speech and introduced herself. She was a tiny Indian scientist wearing a sari and sandals, the only other foreign student to show up for a talk on race in America. She was, he called, a standout in appearance relative to everybody else in the group of both men and women. Shyamala Gopalan had been born the same year as Harris in another British colony on the other side of the planet, but her view of the colonial system was more sheltered. The view of a senior civil servant's daughter, she told him. His speech had raised questions for her. She wanted to hear more. "This was all very interesting to me, and I dare say a bit charming," recalled Harris, now 82, and an emeritus professor of economics at Stanford University, in written answers to the questions. "At a subsequent meeting, we talked again, and at the one after that, and the one after that. The rest is now history." Senator Kamala Harris often tells the story of her parents' romance. They were idealistic foreign graduate students who were swept up in the US civil rights movement of the 1960s. Variation of the classic American immigration story of the huddled masses welcomed to its shores. That description, though, barely scratches the surface of Berkeley in the early 1960s. I mean, the community where they met was a crucible of radical politics as the trade union left overlapped with early black nationalist thinkers. It brought a wave of black undergraduates, many of the descendants of sharecroppers or enslaved people who had migrated from Texas and Louisiana, into conversation with people, students from countries that had recently fought off colonial powers. Members of the study group that drew together in 1962, known as the Afro-American Association, would help build the discipline of black studies, introduce the holiday of Kwanzaa, and establish the Black Panther Party. Long after the particular intensity of the early 60s passed, the community that they created endured. Kamala Harris, who didn't want to comment on the story, was one of the more moderate Democrats in the 2020 presidential field and has cast her political outlook in decidedly pragmatic terms. "I'm not trying to restructure society," she said last summer. "I'm just trying to take care of the issues that wake people up in the middle of the night." Still, at high-profile moments, including when she accepted the vice presidential nomination, she has noted the lasting influence of her parents' circle at Berkeley. For Gopalan and Donald Harris, these friendships would change everything. For decades, the brightest students from British colonies like Jamaica and India had been sent by reflex to Britain to pursue advanced degrees. But Donald Harris and Gopalan were different. Each had a compelling reason to want an American education. In Gopalan's case, the trouble was that she was a woman. Gopalan, the oldest child in a high-achieving Tamil Brahmin family, wanted to be a biochemist, but at Lady Irwin College, founded by the British to provide an education in science to Indian women, she had been forced to settle for a degree in home science. Her brother and her father thought that this was hilarious. "My father and I used to tease her like nobody's business," Gopalan Balajranj said, who would himself go on to earn a doctorate in computer science and economics. "We would say, 'What do you study in home science? Do they teach you to set up plates for dinner?' She'd get so angry and laugh. She'd say, "You don't know what I'm studying." His sister died in 2009, but in retrospect, he realizes she must have been seething. "She would have been frustrated like hell," he said. But Gopalan had a plan. In America, unlike India or the United Kingdom, it was still possible to apply for a degree in biochemistry. She presented her father with a fait accompli. She said, "I am going to study at the University of California at Berkeley." She'd been admitted there, to her father's astonishment. Her father was surprised, her brother said, but not opposed. "He was only worried that none of us had been abroad," he said. "I don't know anybody in the States. I certainly don't know anybody in Berkeley." She said, "Dad, don't worry." And he offered to pay for her first year of studies. 8,000 miles away in 1961, something similar occurred with Harris, who was seeking a doctorate in economics. When he was awarded a prestigious scholarship granted by the British colonial government, it was assumed that he would study in Britain, like the recipients who had preceded him. But Harris didn't want to go to Britain. His early education had marinated him in British culture, all those obedient choruses of "Rule Britannia, Britannia rule the waves." He began to see, he said, how British society's static rigidity of pomp, ceremony, and class had been transplanted onto plantation society in Jamaica. Nope, there was no Britain for him. He was drawn to the US. In fact, as a teenager, he had listened to big bands, jazz bands mostly, like big band jazz music broadcast from the US naval base in Guantanamo, Cuba, and stumbled onto a late night rhythm and blues broadcast from WLAC in Nashville, Tennessee. To him, the US looked, from a distance and perhaps naively, he said, like a lively and evolving dynamic of a racially and ethnically complex society. So, U.S. Berkeley had come to his attention in a new story about student activists traveling to the South to campaign for civil rights. Further investigation of information about this university convinced me I had to go there. Using the scholarship to study in the U.S. was such a grave departure from custom and tradition, he said, that he wrote to an eminent West Indian professor, Sir Arthur Lewis, who was teaching economics at Manchester University. The deliberation took so long that classes had already started when the economist's letter of approval had arrived. "I was overjoyed," Harris recalled. 2 weeks into the semester, he boarded a plane for San Fran and the meeting was set in motion. Shyamala Gopalan fell into important relationships at Berkeley right away. As she stood in line to register for classes in the fall of 1959, the person standing behind her was Cedric Robinson, and you might know this name, a black teenager from Oakland. In 1960, there were fewer than 100 black students in a student body of 20,000. Historian Donna Mersch wrote in her book, Living for the City, Migration, Education, and the Rise of the Black Panther Party. Robinson, whose grandfather had fled Alabama in the 1920s to escape a lynching, was the first in his family to enroll in college. As a black kid from Oakland, he didn't even know what one did to get into university, recalled his widow Elizabeth. The woman in front of him made an impression. Gopalan, his elder by 2 years, often wore a sari in those days, and acquaintances said that they often thought that she came from royalty just because of the way that she carried herself. When Robinson stepped up to the desk, the registrar assumed that he was a graduate student from Africa and asked politely if his country was also paying for his tuition. Robinson, who died in 2016, thought that that was hilarious. He would tell the story over the years as he went on to earn a master's and a doctorate and tenure at the University of California at Santa Barbara, writing 5 books along the way. In fact, Cedric Robinson is whom we owe the credit of racial capitalism to, but that is for another pod. He and Gopalan would form a lifelong friendship. When he wrote his best-known book, Black Marxism, The Making of the Black Radical Tradition in 1983, Cedric Robinson listed the old friends who had helped formulate his ideas. They were all black except for Gopalan. They would both become part of the black intellectual study group that met in the off-campus house of Mary Agnes Louise, an anthropology student. The group, later known as the Afro-American Association, was the most foundational institution in the black power movement. This was no casual book club, by the way. Reading was assigned, and if you failed to keep up with it, you would have to pay. At one discussion on existentialism, community college student Hugh Newson, the future co-founder of the Black Panther Party, was chastised for not having done the reading. Recalled Margot Dashiell, 78, who went on to become a sociology professor at Laney College. He came back the next time and he was fully prepared. Those bare bones gatherings, there was a lot of floor sitting. We were getting a new language, she said. We were inventing a new language. The first new word was Afro-American. I had never heard of it in my life. We're not going to be this thing that had no origin, Negro. We're going to be calling out our heritage. All right, and I think we can end off there. Catch you in the next episode. Peace.